proudly student and listener-supported community radio. CIUT 89.5 FM, the sound of your city.
This program is sponsored by A Different Book List. Located at 779 Bathurst Street, A Different Book List is an African-Canadian-owned bookstore specializing in the rich literature of African and Caribbean diaspora and the Global South. For more information, visit www.adifferentbooklist.com.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and today we're going to be following up on problematic news from around the world under the rubric that the war gods are suiting up. And that's something we've been saying, and I don't think it's quite, maybe they're just naturally thinking that every little thing will be talked out and there won't be a problem. But there is big problems, actually. I'll talk about the strange one that probably none of us have a handle on as yet. Israel has recognized Somaliland as a state, and they are establishing state relations. And when something like this happens, the most dangerous part of it is that it's come sort of out of the blue. Now, not for people, I suppose, who've been sort of following and aware that Somaliland is a particular thorn placed in the side of the East Africa, the Horn of Africa, very dangerous area of the world, and this spot called Somaliland has been allowed, tolerated. I can't account for how it came about, but it's been there actually as a kind of secret friend of Western imperialism. Frankly, it is part of Somalia, and it's always been presumed that it was eventually the matters of how it came into being or whatnot. It's been history of loyalty to particularly British imperialism, and it has had surreptitious relations with Israel. If you look at it on a map, you can see why there's going to be trouble. Somalia has been a very turbulent area, and there's been problems that could easily turn into war. We've had plenty of fighting between Eritrea, Ethiopia, and other neighbors because it is a strategic point on the globe near one of what they call a choke point for commerce. And the seaways, I have to say, all over the world, there are choke points, and we have the law of the seas, and then we have pirates, and then we have state pirates. The state pirates are the ones who have been seeing to it that Somaliland continued to be a problem. It's a politically kind of it used to be an expression, no man's land, but this is going to be very problematic, and we will follow that closely. I want to, as I said at the beginning, there's the war gods are suiting up, and today's headlines, not necessarily in our press, but in world media, it's being noted that some big decisions have been made in the past few days, which will have terrible repercussions. Of course, everyone is watching the Trump and Zelensky matter, and the question of whether there will be a a workable ceasefire with a political settlement satisfactory to all. You can insert laughter and slamming on tables if you like at that point, because that issue has been a matter of false expectations raised in the West. The last headline I saw in the Globe and Mail, actually, right, I think it's right here in front of me, said Putin signals no compromise to end war. Well, of course, that signal, if you were following the media, but incidentally, the trick of it, if you want to understand how to follow it, you simply read what the Russians say, as opposed to people who think they know what they're thinking and think they know what they're going to do, et cetera. It's very important to see their own and hear their own words. They have said all along the Russian position, I would think, is clearly among the things that are bottom line with them is that there's no question issue of joining NATO, that Ukraine has the authorities, I'm going to call them the authorities in Kiev, will have to acknowledge, recognize that their original agreement when they became a separate country from the former Soviet Union, they were going to be neutral and not a belligerent state. They were not going to have nuclear weapons, for example, which had been based there. They were not Ukrainian, but they were based there. And that was the agreement. And because the object was going to be a Europe that was not militarized and threatening to one state or another. All that went by the boards it's hard to say 1994, I think, without thinking 2014. Good guys. You know, this turn of the centuries can get tricky. I read so much history that often I'm talking about it's 1700s, 1800s, and now that we've passed my 25 years, the corner, we still have the overlap of the 20th century. Here we are in the 21st. But the agreement was there would be a peaceful Europe. And the way you do that is that you have an indivisible understanding between states. Then, in other words, if, for example, Ukraine says, well, we're going to do something militarily about our security, they would enter into an agreement with Russia so that Russia could say, well, we too, both of us, actually, seek peace, and we want to be not have a hostile relationship at our border. So we won't have arms on our border, and you won't have arms on your border, and you won't have weapons or foreign associations with states that menace us, namely NATO. NATO didn't, you recall, when the Soviet Union passed away, everyone looked at each other and said, well, NATO is here because there was the Soviet Union. Well, the Soviet Union was gone. So what are you doing? And they said, oh, no, we have to have NATO. And so they maintained an adversarial relationship. Well, clearly, the way you eliminate that is by mutual guarantee of not just your security, because people say they arm themselves for their security. Well, if against security, from what threat? And if you have a party that you're defining as a problem or threat, you enter into an agreement with that party, and then you reduce the threat. But the way NATO talks about peace is the other side having to live with their threat. And that's just a non-starter. I realize I'm talking about things that now sound like a fantasy world, because we're not going in the direction of mutual understanding and mutual security. So if you want to be secure on your side, you have to say, I'm going to assure you, the other party, that there won't be a conflict. And that hasn't been the mode that has been practiced, because primarily we have a superpower that says that none of these things apply to them. If when you hear the words, and by the way, it's not just Trump, it's Joe Biden, Obama too, spoke of the importance of America first, although the Democrats use slightly different cagey language, I would call it. But when they define themselves, they do say, as in the case of, I remember Obama, his line, it was resonated. He was speaking at West Point, that's a military school, and he said, I believe in American exceptionalism in every bone of my body. Well, if you really are negating all international relations and agreements, et cetera, if you're defining yourself as exceptional, and on the Taylor Report, we talk about it over and over, but it needs to be repeated that this idea of exceptionalism, of national superiority, which often translates, as in the case of Trump, into racial superiority as well. you're placing your state in an antagonistic relationship with everybody else, because you're declaring yourself superior to them. To underline this thing of the war gods suiting up, I want to read you something from today's press conference. It was this morning, held in China, and as I say, if you're going to understand the world, you don't go to somebody who interprets it for you. You go to the get it from the horse's mouth, as it were. And so, if you want to know what the other side thinks, ask their leaders, or read it, and then you know their position. If you read an opinion page in the Globe or the New York Times, you're not getting their position. And here it is, anyway. This morning, the press representative of the foreign ministry was asked, starting this morning, the PLA, that would be the People's Liberation Army, Eastern Theater Command is conducting military drills in areas near the Taiwan Island. Some said the drills are carried out in response to the U.S. $11.1 billion arms sales to Taiwan announced by the U.S. this month. What's your comment? And the answer from Lin Jian, the spokesman, he says, the spokesperson of the People's Liberation Army Eastern Theater Command has made an announcement of the military drills. The drills are a punitive and deterrent action against separatist forces who seek Taiwan independence through military buildup, and a necessary move to safeguard. It's a necessary safeguard of China's national sovereignty and territorial integrity. Let me stress that to advance the separatist agenda, the DPP, that's a party that calls for separatism in separation from China in Taiwan. The DPP authorities are turning Taiwan into a powder keg. Their massive and desperate arms purchase further reveal their true nature as provocateurs, saboteurs of peace, and warmongers. Anyone who tries to arm Taiwan to contain China will only embolden the separatists and push the Taiwan Strait closer to the peril of armed conflict. The Taiwan question is at the very core of China's core interests. Nothing will deter China from defending national sovereignty, security, and territorial integrity. Anyone who crosses the line or makes provocations on the question will be met with China's firm response. All attempts to hold back China's reunification will invariably fail. That's pretty sober. And just to underline the danger here, the at the same time, where according to the Associated Press, Japan has announced its government its largest military budget in modern times, a big leap. And Japan, of course, once illegally and violently occupied the Chinese island of Taiwan for 50 years. And they are saying that if there's a problem in Taiwan, that it might pose, this is my own terminology, an existential threat to Japan, and therefore they would perhaps become engaged. I don't even know if they use the word perhaps. Meanwhile, they have been placing weapons and military personnel, etc., in islands very close to Taiwan. So the world has to be awake. Canada, we're told, because of its economic issues, trade issues with the U.S., has been talking about having better relations with China. Given the imperial history of Britain, United States, and Canada, who are basically one little group, they share so much history, and they all have each other's personal numbers, that could be aborted in 5 minutes, the idea of improvement of trade ties, because the our values army that can be raised at apparently a moment's notice by just any alarmist front page in the Star or the Globe or the CBC obviates, if that's the right word, the possibility of a firm confident relations, trade relations, with the most powerful economic state in the world at the moment. That, in terms of development, that is China. It's a great market. It poses no existential threat. They do not claim that we would make a nice, Canada would make a nice province of China. We do have our president who says that as much as he doesn't mind sitting around for 15 minutes with the Prime Minister of Canada occasionally when he feels like it, he would like to Canada to acknowledge that it has to be part of the U.S. system, whether they like it, Canada likes it or not. So when we raise this issue of Japan behaving, talking the way it talks, in that context, to my mind, the trade potential could be blown away like putting out a match. I don't know, does anybody use matches anymore? But at any rate, if they did, it's just, it. All they have to do is say, oh, there's a human rights issue. There's the poor Taiwanese who actually already benefit from the success of the People's Republic of China, because security in the region has been one of the results of the power growth of the Chinese and their neighbors, who cooperate for the most part. They don't have antagonistic relationships. But the last state that they need in the region is that country that has 800 military bases abroad and has aircraft carriers that sail around and in through, and warships if enter the Taiwan Straits. But you just heard, I read it out, that this business of $11 billion in arms from the U.S. to Taiwan, and the Japanese new military budget are signs of a possible war. Lastly, we're going to be closing up here. China was asked today about Somaliland, and China expresses grave concern over Israel's recognition of Somaliland and is firmly against it. China notes a statement issued immediately by the government of the Federal Republic of Somalia, firmly rejecting the move. Regional organizations and countries, including the African Union, the Arab League, the Gulf Cooperation Council, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, have also deplored and strongly condemned the move. The reason I highlight that here towards the end of the show is the only place that I know where the Chinese Navy has a base is a stone's throw away at a place called Djibouti. And we started off with this news that Japan is remilitarizing, and it is world knowledge, and there is a Chinese Navy is very active, basically saying no more games around Taiwan. This has been the Taylor Report. I think it's time, according to Pedro and assorted friends, for us to go. 33-45-78 is coming up. Steve Fruitman, great guy.